Abraham and Sarah are advanced in years. In one place it says that Abraham was 100 years old and Sarah was 90 when they conceived Isaac. Probably an exaggeration. But the point is, well, there's a couple of points. One is that this is a miracle child that comes from God. And the Old Testament often talks about miraculous births from barren women. And then, of course, in the New Testament, we have the virgin birth of Jesus. Miraculous, they're actions of God, not of humans. That's one of the points that the biblical authors want to make, that despite our human intentions and our human abilities and all those sorts of things, God is acting in our lives even when we don't know it. And our knowledge of it, our understanding of it, comes with age. Now, getting old doesn't necessarily make you wise, but if you're praying all that time, it could. And so one of the points I think that the biblical authors are making here about Abraham and Sarah is they went on this journey together, probably already advanced in years when the journey began. They began in Ur, which is in modern-day southern Iraq. And they were asked by God to travel from their homeland with their flocks and their family and all that sort of thing to the promised land of Israel. And so the story in Genesis about these two has to do with that journey that begins when they're already old. And why? Because they probably have known God well enough in their prayer that they're able to trust and leave their homeland and go on that journey, the end of which they don't know or understand. But then, as their journey continues, they run into all sorts of difficulties, and they're not perfect people. And there's one situation where Abraham passes off Sarah as his sister to save them from the wrath of this king and the land they're going through. Pretty bad stuff, you know. Abraham wasn't perfect. But what marriage is? What family is perfect? We learn through the trials and tribulations, through the transgressions and the forgiveness. Sarah must have forgiven Abraham for that. And then, by the time they're really advanced in age, they finally have enough knowledge of God to trust that they're actually going to conceive in their old age. And this miracle is able to happen. You know, the miracles often happen because we are prepared enough, because we're open enough to the miracle. And so, in the gospel story, you have a similar kind of situation. Mary and Joseph, of course, are much younger, but they are, in a way, the fulfillment of all the Old Testament prophecy, because they are surrounded by this mystery of the incarnation. And so Abraham and Sarah are kind of a type for Mary and Joseph. And so they bring the child, Jesus, to present him in the temple. And there's this prophet there who predicts sorrow. The mystery of the incarnation, the Christmas season, is filled with bright light, joy, promise, all those sorts of things. But there's always a kind of a dark shadow to these stories in the Bible as well. So, for example, the story of the flight into Egypt, that they have to be exiles for a few years because of a cruel king who is trying to put the child to death. And the prophet Simeon tells Mary, a sword will pierce your heart. In other words, in the midst of all this joy and promise, we predict his death. And the story of the three kings, one of the gifts is myrrh, which is an anointing of the dead body. So it's a foreshadowing, biblically, of his passion and resurrection. So the Feast of the Incarnation includes all of this mystery, the brightness and the darkness together, the promise and the threat together. because life is real. And family life is a kind of a microcosm of the life of the church, and the church is a microcosm of the life of the human race, and it's all mixed together. The joy and the sadness, the promise and the threat. Marriage and family life are filled with great joy, and you wouldn't trade it for anything. But that doesn't negate the fact that there's sorrow too, and that we transgress against one another, and that we have to forgive. And again, this is a microcosm of the whole human race. Nations transgress against each other, and instead of going to war, they should be forgiving one another. One of the reasons the church suggests that marriage should be for life is because we do transgress, we do sin against one another. And it isn't a matter of going to war all the time. It's a matter of reconciling and healing. And the church is a reconciling church, or it's supposed to be. And of course, it isn't sometimes. But the whole point of being Christ's body is that he reconciled God with the world and the world with God. He is the reconciliation, the forgiveness personified. And we're baptized into him. So we're baptized into that reconciling, healing life. And we exercise that in family, but we also exercise that in community and in nations and in the human race. It all comes from our ability, and we get better at it as we get older, but our ability to forgive, to heal, to reconcile, and our ability to trust in the activity of God that's sometimes invisible. And sometimes it's hard to hope that it's actually happening, because our suffering can be long and our endurance can be difficult. But as we get older through prayer, we trust in God's promise. Like Abraham and Sarah, we trust that the Lord's will is going to be fulfilled despite our inadequacies.